Now to some interesting parallels between the growing Korean wave and efforts to change the perception of te reo Māori among teenagers. Rachel Ka'ai-Mahuta has just written a piece about this for the Conversation website, which has been republished on the spin-off. And Rachel is of Ngāti Porou, Ngāi Tahu, Hawaiian and Cook Island Māori descent, and she's a senior lecturer at AUT, where she's based in Te Ipukaria Research Institute, and she joins me now. Kia ora, Rachel.
Tēnā koe.
Nice to have you on the show. Tell us what inspired you to write this piece.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Earlier this year, I had a chance encounter with an Aucklander who was a recent university graduate, and they majored in Korean at university, and this was kind of interesting to me, so we sparked up a conversation, and I asked what inspired them to major in Korean, and they pointed to a teenage passion for K-pop as the inspiration. So they loved K-pop as a teen, and this sparked an interest in Korea in general, so the culture and the language and the people. And they tried to learn Korean at high school, but it wasn't available, so they decided to learn it as a second language at university.
Rachel, can you give us a quick definition of K-pop, please?
Oh, sure. K-pop. It's Korean pop music, so pop music in the Korean language.
Okay. So she took it up at university. She sort of got a bit of Korean culture fever, huh?
Mm-hmm, exactly. And it was actually, that encounter was interesting timing because we in Te Pukaria Research Institute had just finished up a three-year project looking at te reo Māori in the home and how families are raising their children in te reo Māori, and looking at the challenges that those families face and at the strategies they employ to kind of overcome those hurdles. And one of the key findings from that research was the fact that maintaining and supporting te reo in the lives of adolescents, so that kind of pre-teen through to teenage years, is really tricky, and there's a decrease in the influence of the parents, obviously, at that time, and a kind of a decrease in the control they have over the daily lives and the language interactions of that age group. And then there's an increase in the influence of friends and a huge increase in the influence of entertainment and pop culture. So music, social media, TV, gaming. So it was interesting that I had that encounter right at the end of that three-year research project, and having found that information about Māori teenagers, Māori-speaking teenagers, so focusing more on the language rather than the ethnicity.
Yeah, I was talking to a mother last night, mother of two Kohanga Reo kids, and she was talking about how grateful she is or how stoked she is when she comes across resources, particularly online, for her kids that are in te reo Māori, that it's kind of rare, but there are a few out there if you know where to look. But I imagine by the time you get to teenage years, it's very, very difficult to find anything.
It is, yeah, it's really difficult. There aren't a lot of that age group in particular is actually really underserved in terms of te reo Māori resources and also just Māori language content. So things like TV programs and music and games and social media content, there's not a lot in te reo Māori. And so that age group, that sort of content that they're consuming tends to be in English. So the project we're working on at the moment focuses on that group and looks at how we can better promote and support and encourage te reo in the lives of adolescents. And so I thought it was an interesting comparison to make with the Korean wave and to see maybe if there were some lessons to be learnt from the Korean wave for Māori language revitalisation.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It seems like a great idea. The big catch, I suppose, is it's quite hard for adults to work out how to make something cool for teenagers, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I think te reo Māori is cool, but it doesn't necessarily mean that people younger than me will. And I think it's just really looking at how maybe the Korean wave was actually the result of a strategic push by the Korean government to export their culture. So yes, it is hard to anticipate what will be cool amongst teenagers, but there is some work that you can do to try and promote and use the language and content aimed at teenagers. And whether it hits the mark or not is another story.
Yeah. Sorry, did you say that the Korean government did play a role in promoting Korean culture?
They did, yes. So it was a strategy. They sought out to export their pop culture to the world and to increase their soft power, so their influence socially and culturally. And it was really successful. So the Korean Wave, for those people maybe that don't know what the term refers to, it refers to the rise in popularity and global spread of Korean entertainment and culture. So it includes things like K-pop, Korean pop music, or K-dramas, so television programs in the Korean language, which Netflix has invested in and acquired a bunch of them. And actually, it's a little bit of a rabbit hole. If you watch one K-drama, Netflix will recommend 12 more to you. And it refers to movies, Korean movies, and even extends to things like Korean food and the Korean skincare industry, actually. I don't know if you've ever heard of or if you've ever used a Korean sheet mask.
No, I haven't. But I'm up for anything, Rachel. And interesting, too, that we do hear about non-English speaking countries where it's kind of cool to speak English, where young people are interested in learning English so that they can consume American culture. And yet in Korea, it seems that there's a preference for speaking Korean. And in fact, the Bangtan boys that you point to, or the Korean pop group BTS, they could sing in English, but they choose to release the majority of their music and other content in Korean, and that suggests that it's cooler.
Exactly. Yeah, they BTS are probably the biggest pop group in the world right now, and the majority of all of the content that they've released, so not just their music, but also they have a travel show. They actually came to New Zealand last year. They've got a variety show. They've got lots of behind-the-scenes footage that they release on YouTube. And then as well as, obviously, their music, most of that is in Korean. In fact, they've only just recently released a single entirely in English. So they've managed to amass all of that fan base and that popularity through their own language, which I think is amazing.
Yeah. So what might an approach look like with Te Reo Māori? Do you need me to get on TV and tell millennials how cool it is to speak Māori? Gen Z is.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'll make a big impression.
I think that'll be a great start.
Yeah.
I just think that we need to consider these things in any strategy that's targeting this age group. So, and there is work that's already been done in this area. So Dr. Hinurewa Potu and her research for her PhD about 5 years ago now, she called for more opportunities to have Te Reo Māori spoken and heard in social situations. So her research focused on the fact that children often associate te reo with more formal contexts like the classroom or the marae because there aren't enough opportunities for them to hear that informal language. So the language of friendship and of humour and emotions and socialising, playing, all of those sorts of things. So there has been some work done in this area, and really we just need more of a push to make Māori cool. For young people.
Yeah. If the government was going to spend some money on promoting Te Reo Māori, this seems like an obvious choice, maybe a platform for the, you know, preteens and tweens and teenagers where they can consume sort of Te Reo Māori content that is suitable for them.
Exactly. I'd love to...
This is just me coming up with broadcasting policy on the hop. Yeah, sorry.
I look forward to a day when we have Te Reo Māori music in, you know, consistently entering the charts. And when Netflix was actually recommending to me Māori language dramas, and we can really see the language visible in the entertainment industry and in pop culture generally.
Yeah. What about YA books, popular young adult books translated into te reo Māori?
Yeah, and actually there is work already being done in that area as well. So between when we finished that research, or when we were wrapping up that research that I spoke about, that three-year research project, and now they have announced that Harry Potter is being translated into te reo Māori, and I think just this week pre-orders happened for that. So that's amazing to have young adult literature available in te reo Māori is really important. That's where you learn a lot of that language around, you know, the language of growing up and the building blocks of what makes adult language.
Do you feel like, or do you know, if there's a sort of an army of te reo Māori speakers in that under 10 group who are sort of coming up and about to hit that crucial 11 to 20 age group?
Yes, of course. There's always a pipeline of Māori language speakers coming through from early childhood. A lot of speakers come out of kōhanga reo, so of the immersion preschools, and they go into immersion schools, and then they hit that, like I said, that adolescent age group, and the language often becomes more about school and more associated with school than it does outside of the classroom. So it's really, if we think about that pipeline of te reo Māori speakers from birth all the way through to adulthood, I kind of think of that adolescent age group as almost the slow leak in the pipeline, and it's something that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, someone, again, same mum actually last night, Cara Rickard, if you're listening, Cara, was telling me how cool it was to have that Waiata Anthems album come out last year to actually hear some recognisable pop music sung in te reo Māori.
Exactly. It does a lot for the perceived value of the language, especially for that age group that we're talking about. And Waiata Anthems is a great example of how te reo Māori can be pushed into some of those spaces that maybe traditionally it hasn't been heard before. And definitely pop music and music that New Zealanders, we know New Zealanders love, and we know that young people love, having those translated into te reo Māori does a lot for the way that people view the language and their attitude towards the language. And that, like I said, it increases the perceived value of the language and the status in our communities.
Cool. I'm sort of in the mood for hearing one of those now. I've just ordered one for the music team. And for now, Dr. Rachel Kahai-Mahuta, lovely to chat with you, and thanks for raising this idea. Good luck with it.
Kia ora, tēnā koe.
If you'd like to read Rachel's original piece, talking about some of the interesting parallels between the Korean wave and the perception of te reo Māori among teens, it's on the Spin-Off website. We'll put a link on our website.